Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. More than 500,000 Americans are arrested each year for smoking pot. These are ordinary citizens like you and me whose lives and careers are being needlessly destroyed. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
Distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. It is Wednesday, June the 6th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. We're in our first day of our second year of podcasting here at Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Thanks to everyone who sent in emails of support yesterday for our one-year anniversary, and you can check out our one-hour anniversary show. We'll have links to it right up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. There is just no way to get to all of the hundreds of voices we've featured here on the podcast. If you'd like to listen to more of our individual interviews, visit the Audio Stash archive and go to the guest interviews section. I've been recording a lot of brand new interviews. Very soon, next week, we're going to hear from Lester Grinspoon, also from Cliff Thornton, who ran for governor of Connecticut last year. And we'll speak with Doug McVeigh and Kevin Zeese from Common Sense for Drug Policy, all here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Today, we'll hear from Dr. Mitch Earlywine in his regular Wednesday Cannabis Science segment. We'll also speak with Diane Byram from Michigan. Diane is helping run the new statewide ballot initiative campaign for medical marijuana. That should be on the ballot in the 2008 election in Michigan. That's all here today on the Audio Stash. Let's get started with important news from Normal. Our news today: Rhode Island's governor vetoes medical marijuana legislation. Rhode Island's Republican Governor Donald Carcieri vetoed legislation this week that seeks to make the state's one-year-old medical marijuana law permanent. Unless amended by the legislature, Rhode Island's medical marijuana law will expire at the end of this month. Currently, nearly 300 patients and caregivers are registered to possess cannabis under the law. More than 80% of state lawmakers had previously affirmed the measure. Under state law, support of 3/5 of the state's elected officials is necessary to override the governor's veto. Leadership in both the House and Senate chambers in Rhode Island said that they expect to consider overriding the governor's veto before adjournment of the 2007 session. Please visit Normal's Take Action Center, and if you're a Rhode Island resident, make your voice heard to the governor's office and to your state elected officials. We have links to the Take Action Center at normalaudiostash.com.
76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. and over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Wednesdays here on the Audio Stash, we get the chance to discuss the science of cannabis with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Mitch is professor of psychology at State University of New York and author of the book Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, and editor of the new book Pot Politics. We have links to the books at normalaudiostash.com. Mitch, welcome back to the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Great to speak with you in our first interview of year two here on the Audio Stash, Mitch. Now, today we're going to discuss the NORML Weekly press release story, Cannabinoids Enhance Analgesic Activity of Opiates in Inflammatory Pain, Study Says. There's a lot of big words in that headline here, Mitch, so let's explore this. Are they saying that the addition of THC is actually reducing pain?
Well, this is funny because, in fact, marijuana's analgesic effects go back at least to Pliny the Elder in the year 70, so a lot of folks are going to say, well, what's the big surprise? I think what's novel about this study is it's showing that folks who are already on opiate drugs, things like Vicodin and basically things from the opium plant, can decrease how much of that they have to take if they have cannabis as an adjunct, as another way of getting at their pain. So yes, the cannabis does appear to be decreasing the pain on its own, but it seems to be enhancing some of the ways that these opiate drugs can decrease pain. And inflammatory pain is a particularly tough one. This is one that's usually related to swelling or something like that in the extremities or other areas of the body. And it just really, really hurts, and there just aren't very many medications that really address this kind of pain well. The problem with the opiate meds, as folks know, is you develop tolerance really rapidly, so you end up having to take higher and higher doses. It does get lethal after a while. Opiates, you know, can shut down your breathing functions and things like that, so you really don't want to go anywhere near that kind of dosage. And some of the side effects are really nasty. Nobody likes to talk about it, but the opiate meds make you constipated. They can be just really hard on your system. And so the idea that you could decrease your use of this really dangerous painkiller by enhancing it with something that really has, you know, no lethal dose and few negative consequences associated with it, especially among medical users, is a real delight, a real wonderful thing to see happen and a great thing to have in the literature.
Now, usually when someone is assigned opiate pain medications, it's not the only drug that they're taking at the time. But because THC is so non-toxic, I assume that it's also safe for patients to add this to what is likely a big regimen of other drugs.
That's absolutely the case. The other thing is the, you know, as we talked about with any inhaled drug, the rapid onset of the pain relief is such, dare I say, a pleasure for some of these folks who are really suffering. If it takes quite a long time to get morphine into your system unless you're injecting it, which I certainly don't recommend, whereas inhaled cannabis can show relief of pain within literally seconds.
So the idea presented here is not that patients would stop taking these opiates altogether, but they could lessen the amount of opioid medication they're taking, which is, it's important because patients do quickly build up a tolerance to opiates, I understand.
Well, exactly, and the toxicity is very real. So people die from opiate overdose every day, and, you know, these pharmaceutical opiates are as safe as they can be. A lot of them are often combined with aspirin and other medications, though, that can make that toxicity increase. So it's something you really have to be careful about. So anything that can make it so you take less of it is going to be a huge, huge help. I think also there's a bit of politics in this, in that testing cannabis alone on these people is probably worthwhile, but getting approval for that kind of research, as you can imagine, would be much more controversial than research that would just allow them to decrease their opiates rather than substitute cannabis for the opiates.
Now, this particular research was conducted here in the United States, but published in a European medical journal. And because in Europe there are things like Sativex available, do you think that Europeans are perhaps more accepting of incorporating THC into a pain management regime?
That seems to be the case when you look across a number of different journals that appear in Europe. I think the people who end up reviewing these studies are often European and have different attitudes about medical cannabis from academics in the United States. But also, the choice of where an article gets submitted is often up to the authors. This is a journal that's been pretty sensitive to THC-related effects in the past, and I'm sure the authors saw, hey, this is a chance for us to publish this quickly. Let's go ahead and submit to this journal.
Now, Mitch, in the study we're discussing, they were performing a preclinical trial on arthritic rats. Now, arthritis is something that afflicts millions of Americans. It's also a condition where inflammation and pain are serious parts of the overall symptoms.
Well, the advantage of this study is we've got a decent animal model for this. So you can imagine what kind of hoops you'd have to go through to get approval to do this kind of work in humans. We've got decent ways of showing that basically the chemicals that are released in rats are same as the ones that are released in humans in response to some of the stressors that are associated with rheumatism and arthritis. And so because we have that good animal model, we can then test the pain. The pain measures in the animals, as weird as it sounds, are actually very, very good. So we have a good sense for when the rats are feeling bad and when they're feeling better. And because we're talking about a potentially lethal opiate here, the opportunity to alter dosage without some of the same consequences you might have in human research are also definitely present.
Now, we know that THC binds with the body's cannabinoid receptors, but how do opiates work? Is there perhaps some synergy on that receptor level?
We're still getting a good feel for the interaction between the CB1, the cannabinoid receptors, and the opiate receptors, but generally, any of these opiate drugs go to this mu opioid receptor, this very specially shaped spot on every neuron, goes there, connects to it, and then gets essentially those neurons to fire so that the response to the pain is decreased. You've got these natural endorphins that we hear about all the time, and that's very much what the opiate system is all about. Well, because they're such hardwired, wonderful things, you can imagine the abuse potential is incredibly high, and the opportunity for tolerance is also extremely rapid. People develop tolerance to these drugs very rapidly, and in part it's because it's right there at the level of the neuron and in very important parts of the brain.
Now, Mitch, opiates are usually prescribed as a last resort for even terminally ill patients and those suffering severe pain debilitation. But what kinds of medications are prescribed for people who do have serious inflammation or even chronic pain, but are not necessarily debilitated by it?
That's been a real problem, and I'm afraid the United States has been sort of behind the curve as far as this. People who have chronic pain but aren't debilitated could still benefit from opiate medication and could still do well. Unfortunately, if you prescribe too many of these as a physician, various licensing boards start breathing down your neck and think you're some kind of drug pusher. So that gets problematic right off the bat. We do have other analgesics, these non-steroidal things, which actually seem to benefit from cannabis interactions as well. And there's a wonderful set of pain management techniques related to relaxation and stress management and things like that and just standard psychological interventions. People really benefit from those as well, but it takes a little time. You have to spend 20 minutes mowing out, and you have to plan your day a little better, and you have to make sure that you get a little bit of exercise every day. And it's all that good health behaviors that we all know we're supposed to do that nobody really wants to. But, of course, no pill is going to be a substitute for that. And as much as I love medical cannabis, even that isn't going to suddenly decrease all your stressors and make your life an effortless day after day. Still, I'm eager to see more work like this because I think this may be the way that people become more willing to let medical cannabis be part of pain treatment.
So what might be the future here? There are pills on the market already that combine different pain medications. So is it an oral administration, a combination that might work best, or is it smoked cannabis or vaporized cannabis that could really help here?
I mean, the big advantage of the inhaled cannabis is that rapid onset of pain relief, and I just can't imagine that, a synthetic cannabinoid with an opiate combined in a pill is going to have all those advantages. it's wonderful to decrease the, you know, total amount of opiate you take because you've got cannabinoid medicine included, but to lose out on that rapid onset of, you know, inhaled vapor just seems a real bad idea. And I'm hoping that folks will lean more towards these vaporized products instead of swallowing yet another pill.
So when we're talking about someone who is in serious pain right now, it's inhaled cannabis that would be the best method.
Well, and then the advantage is you've got the anti-nausea effects too, so if they are nauseated, then swallowing the pain meds isn't going to be as big an issue if they've already had some cannabis vapor.
Righto. Well, Mitch, this has been another fascinating conversation here today. I really appreciate you joining us to discuss this new research.
Oh, sure, and have a good day.
Thank you, Mitch, and you as well. Dr. Mitch Earlywine is professor of psychology at State University of New York, author of the book Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, and editor of the new book Pot Politics. We have links to the books at normalaudiostash.com, and Mitch joins us each Wednesday for the Cannabis Science segment. Some fine music found at podshow.com. We have links to all the artists at normalaudiostash.com.
Hey, how's it going? My name's Will. I don't work at a used record store. I don't own an iguana, although I'm sure they make great pets. I don't have dreadlocks or play the acoustic guitar. I can remember quite well, thank you, and no, I don't constantly have the munchies. When 4:20 comes around, I've still got 40 minutes of work left. I've never hit a girl on a bike with my car or shot my friend with a shotgun. I've never had to apologize for letting a girl I was watching drown in a pool while I was getting high because, duh, I wouldn't be getting high if I was around children. I'm a regular guy who works regular jobs, just like the majority of all Americans who use marijuana occasionally and responsibly. My name is Will, and I'm normal.
The state of Michigan has played host to a number of successful ballot initiatives regarding medical marijuana in cities like Ann Arbor, Ferndale, Detroit, and Flint. Now there's a statewide effort to have a ballot initiative for statewide medical marijuana use in the 2008 election. Joining us today to discuss this statewide initiative is political consultant Diane Byram. Diane served as House Majority Leader in the Michigan Legislature and now runs a consulting firm who have been contracted to assist with the initiative campaign. Diane, welcome to the program today.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Thanks again for taking time to speak with us today. Now, Diane, tell us about the initiative and what it seeks to do in Michigan.
Well, this is initiation of legislation to allow, under Michigan state law, the medical use of marijuana. Now, this is a very narrow in scope, but it is state legislation enacted by an initiative process, which means it requires voter signatures. The goal of the coalition is to achieve 550,000 signatures, even though we know to move this issue forward, it only takes 304,101. We want that cushion of accurate, valid signatures.
Now, we've seen those city and municipal initiatives have a great success related to medical marijuana. So, you know, we know that Michigan voters are very involved in this ballot initiative process.
That's absolutely true. In fact, we have five Michigan cities that have passed medical marijuana initiatives, the most recent being Flint in February of this year, and all of them have passed in the mid-60% range.
Now, tell us about this signature gathering process. I assume it's both about getting people on the street and also public awareness as well.
Well, it's both. First of all, our Constitution, if you're going to initiate legislation, you need to have that through a signature petition drive. This is a grassroots drive. The focus is going to be getting interested people and patients across Michigan involved in collecting the signatures on a voluntary basis, and then that will move the issue forward. Ultimately, it will be on the November 2008 ballot.
And Diane, just gaining those 500,000 plus signatures, does that in and of itself send a strong message to the state legislators about the issue?
Well, that certainly indicates that there is grassroots support for this initiative. And again, the legislature has the option. They could go ahead and adopt it without amendment. They can't change it. They have to enact the initiative language by its entirety. Or they could choose not to vote or vote it down, but if they choose not to vote or vote it down, it automatically goes to the ballot in November 2008. I think it sends a clear message, though, that there are people from all walks of life that believe that seriously ill people deserve to get relief from the terrible suffering without going to jail. That means there should be a legal mechanism in Michigan so that they can use marijuana for medical reasons under a doctor's recommendation.
And because of those city initiatives, is there a level of awareness about medical marijuana already with those elected officials?
Some are, but clearly there needs to be more public education, more public awareness, and that's what will happen during the course of the campaign and as we build this grassroots coalition.
And Diane, as someone who's been very involved with Michigan politics, you know, how would you characterize the legislature there now? Is it conservative, progressive, or liberal?
I would say it would lean towards a conservative bend.
And being involved with this initiative, Diane, have you met with patients and spoken with those who have a personal stake in this?
We are just beginning that process, and the answer is yes, I have. And as we go forward with this coalition, it's called the Coalition for Compassionate Care, we are asking people to visit the website, which is www.stoparrestingpatients.org. We're going to be identifying more and more people that could benefit by the medical use of marijuana and are willing to come forward and tell their stories. And that's going to be part of the public information campaign as we go through the days and the weeks and the months leading up to both the gathering of these signatures as well as putting the issue on the ballot.
Now, there are 12 states that currently allow legal access to marijuana for medical patients. California is perhaps the largest and most widely known program. And do you think that people automatically have California's program come to mind when you discuss the issue of medical marijuana access?
I think in terms of a widespread audience in Michigan, no, they don't. I don't think they are really aware that 12 states have passed medical marijuana laws. And again, that's part of what we need to do is to educate the public exactly what we're talking about here.
Of course, in California, they have the dispensary and co-op model for patients access. You know, how might that access work in Michigan under this initiative?
Well, our law doesn't quite go towards what we're proposing in the initiative. Isn't quite like what California's law is in terms of the buying co-ops. We actually set out in the law how much marijuana or plant materials that a individual can possess. So it's a little bit different than the California law, but clearly you can look to California and the decade plus of experience that they have had to say that this is something that in fact works, that it can be implemented on a state law, at a state level. And now you have 12 states that have done this, including California, over the last decade.
Diane, when the city initiative passed in Flint earlier this year, one of the most notable things about it was the almost complete lack of opposition to it. We asked about legislators, but do you think that Michigan voters are aware of those successful municipal initiatives?
There's moderate awareness. Again, it's not a heightened awareness. There's moderate awareness. Although what we find if you ask people on the street what their position is on the medical use of marijuana under a doctor's supervision, again with a registration through the Department of Community Health, that it, across all demographics, age, gender, where they live in the state of Michigan, Republican, Democratic leaning, there tends to be strong support for this medical use of marijuana.
Flint and Detroit have a strong African-American population. Do you see a lot of grassroots support in the black community for medical marijuana statewide?
I believe there is, and again, I think it crosses all demographic indicators in Michigan. And we see that both in terms of the diversity we have in the five cities that have passed medical marijuana laws, as well as statewide polling on the issue.
We've seen medical marijuana become a real strong area of bipartisan confluence, a somewhat rare issue that politicians of both or three parties find common ground. You know, do you think that that will be the case there in Michigan as well?
I believe that is the case in Michigan because it's about people that are suffering, where the use of marijuana for medical purposes under a doctor's recommendation will help treat their disease. And people can identify with that. When someone is suffering pain and has a very serious illness, such as the wasting syndrome, severe and chronic pain, nausea, seizures, muscle spasms, those kinds of illnesses and the kinds of characteristics associated with those illnesses, if marijuana will help treat them under a doctor's recommendation, then I believe people will say yes to a medical marijuana bill in Michigan.
And Diane, as this initiative moves forward, Michigan is a large land area. It must take dozens of activists on the ground in this signature gathering process.
It does take dozens of activists and people who know someone that is suffering from one of these diseases that could benefit from medical marijuana, or knowing someone that has used marijuana in a medical setting, to be able to go out there and get active and build the groundswell of grassroots support.
And also, do you think that the high cost of health care and prescription drugs especially is playing into voters favoring medical marijuana?
It could very well, because we know that Marinol isn't necessarily effective for all patients, and it costs some 20 times more than what marijuana would use in a medical setting, and what marijuana would cost in a medical setting. So that may be part of it, but again, what we're seeking to do is to build a groundswell of grassroots support. We need activists out there. We need people who know someone that is suffering that could medically benefit from the use of marijuana to get involved in the petition drive on a volunteer basis. And I would direct them to the website, and they can get in contact with the campaign.
And do you think having patients out there on the ground helping educate the public will be an important aspect to the signature gathering process?
Absolutely. I think the patients are the critical piece of this entire initiative because it is about the individual patients, the people that are suffering, who who could medically benefit by the use of marijuana that this campaign is all about. It starts and it ends with the people that are suffering.
And in states that have this ballot initiative process available to them, you know, why is this advantageous compared to the traditional lobbying and legislative route?
Well, it doesn't appear that the legislative route is going to yield any passage of legislation. It has been introduced a couple of times. It's introduced right now in the Michigan House of Representatives. The bills have not received hearings, and it's very unlikely that they would move through both chambers and ever end up on the governor's desk. So the citizens' initiative process is a very viable process for the coalition to undertake.
So this initiative process really puts the power of government directly in the hands of the voters.
Absolutely.
Well, Diane, I want to thank you for joining us here today to discuss this Michigan statewide ballot initiative. We'll have links to the coalition's website at normalaudiostash.com today, and I look forward to speaking with you again as this process moves forward.
Thank you very much, Chris. Have a great day.
Thank you again, Diane. Have a very good day as well. Diane Byram is a political consultant from Michigan. She's helping run this statewide ballot initiative campaign for medical marijuana, likely to appear on the Michigan ballot in 2008. We have links for more information at normalaudiostash.com. You've been listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's NORMALAUDIOSTASH.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.